committee for Wednesday, March 21st. And informational hearing, and we're meeting jointly with our colleagues.
Thank you, Chair Buckley. Concurrently opening up the informational meeting on Wednesday, March 21st for the Joint Ways and Means Subcommittee on Education. We're going to first talk about the Education Enterprise Budgeting Proposal. Appreciate the opportunity to do this. And I'm going to go ahead and call up Mr. James Sager, the Governor's Education Policy Advisor, and Nancy Heiligman, who's Assistant Vice President for Finance and Administration at Oregon State University. And let them take it away. Welcome.
Thank you, Chair Lizio, members of the committee. For the record, I'm James Sager with the Governor's Office. Appreciate both time to try and update you on the work we've been doing the past several years and the work that we've asked Nancy Heiligman to do to kind of lay out a path for us for the future and explain what we're thinking. You've heard the Governor speak many times about one of the problems that we have in Oregon around education is having this bifurcated silo thinking where we create budgets inside kind of each little sector and we don't have much coordination across the sectors. Prior to the last legislative session, we pulled representatives from each of the sectors together in a room, and it was the first time that any of us could ever remember in history that we actually had representatives from each sector sitting down and discussing with each other how they create the budgets for their sector. We learned a great deal and really began to have a pretty rich dialogue. In this past interim, then we took it the next step further and we said, look, in preparing our recommendations for the governor for his budget, what we need to do is look at both the policies that are driving the sectors and then how the budget can come together to meet those policy objectives. And before you can do that, as an enterprise, you have to determine, so what is our collective goal? What is the goal for the state of Oregon, for Oregonians? And the services we're going to provide pre-kindergarten through adult education. And it begins to help you focus then on how all these different pieces come together. The legislature, very rightly so, has been pushing very hard for all of us to be thinking of performance measures when we come forward with proposals. Part of the problem has been we have lots of performance measures for lots of separate, discrete ideas and programs. What we need to do is make sure that we pull those all together in a coordinated fashion so that, in fact, the effort is moving towards bigger state goals, the things that you and the governor should be and are concerned about as far as moving the state forward. So that was the effort that came together in putting together the governor's budget, aligning those policies, making sure that the budget was together. But in doing that, we discovered that, in fact, there are a lot of holes in our data. We use different approaches to even think about how we fund the different sectors. And so we asked Nancy Heiligman through a grant that we received from the Gates Foundation because she had worked. She had helped create the K-12 database system that we use to see if, in fact, we could take it the next step further and say, can we create the same kind of coordinated data system for the post-secondary system? And then, with her help and the help of the folks with her, begin to lay out what are the kinds of questions now. How could this coordinated budget approach allow us to look more holistically at education and begin to call out the questions that we need to, as policy people, to call out and then ask for research and make selective targeted investments. And then the third piece that we won't get into details today on, but I'm just going to let you so you understand kind of the scope of what we're looking at. We're also trying to create a model whereby we'll be able to look at the different options and anticipate what the impact of that change would be on the entire system. And the example I would use is the shared responsibility model that we've talked about for a post-secondary. To be able to look at that and say, if we open this valve and we allow more students into the post-secondary system, what do we expect the outcome to be of opening that valve? What are the impacts on whether it's community college or the university system? And so we begin to anticipate investments and outcomes that we're going to have to be thinking of down the road. And so we hope that this is going to create a very dynamic model for not only the governor's office, but clearly for all of you to be able to use as we debate policy decisions and then ask, so now how does that help us as a total system as a state move to these statewide goals? And with that kind of just background, I'll ask Nancy to walk us through this material.
Thank you. Chair Galizio, Chair Buckley, members of the committees, for the record, I'm Nancy Heiligman, Associate Vice President for Finance and Administration at Oregon State University. I'm here today in my capacity as the Director of the Pre-K-20 Budget Project funded by the Gates Foundation. I'd like to acknowledge the work and support of James Sager on this project. He's been very supportive. And also let you know how responsive the education agencies have been in working with us and helping us to gather the data. And I'd also like to recognize John Taponia of Echo Northwest, who are the primary consultants on the project. I have two packets of information for you today, and first I'm going to walk through the paper version of a PowerPoint presentation that you have in your packet, and then second, I'll briefly highlight the progress report that we've prepared for you. It has specific process recommendations and examples of the data that we've collected to date in sample formats. I want to emphasize that this project is very much a work in progress. We're looking for your guidance and feedback as we move forward on the project, and we really see it as a demonstration project that is really meant for feedback and input. So to begin with the PowerPoint overview, in the overview I'll go through the project scope, making the case for a new budget framework, describe the analytical tools that we've put together to help inform the policy debate, and then talk about how we might put these tools and processes to work. First, the scope of the project. It's to develop comparable budget data and tools to support policy decision-making across the education enterprise, and to give you, as policymakers, the information that you need to view the enterprise as a system rather than as a group of education agencies. We're also recommending changes in budgeting methods, in budget development, presentation, and the review process. So why a new budget framework? We believe that a clear, unified budgeting system is a critical tool for supporting the goals that you have set for education in Oregon, to help you to understand key issues and to support effective policy decision making. You need clear, consistent information to direct our limited resources to optimize student progress across the system. State education budgeting has not evolved with the changes in funding that have occurred over the past several years and the much higher performance expectations that the state has set. Current state budgeting has wide variations across the continuum, including budgeting methods, basic assumptions in budget development, such as inflation, enrollment, compensation costs, revenues. These all differ across the agencies. Also, the level of budget aggregation and the information that is included in the state budget. Not all revenues and expenses displayed in a way in the state budget that's readily available. The agencies put much work and effort into providing information to you during the legislative process, but we all do it separately to some extent. And so when the information gets to you, it's often seems piecemeal and there is clearly a lack of consistent per-student information. We all have various ways of counting students, of calculating different costs, and that often is confusing as it's presented to policymakers. So the vision that we're painting for budget presentations would be that they're unified from pre-kindergarten through graduate school, including all revenue sources, that they're transparent, presented in clear, comparable, and consistent formats across the continuum, and that they're more student-centered with a focus on students rather than agencies, and enabling you to identify leverage points along the continuum that could accelerate student progress. And the last factor is that they're performance-based, making investment decisions to performance expectations. The purpose of the proposed changes is really to help to change the nature of the policy debate, to move it from one that's based on education agencies and levels of funding to one that's based on groups of students and investing in educational services for students. Rather than an argument about a single number, a discussion about investments and outcomes. And changing the debate from the funding levels to how to get better results for students. Rather than budgeting on the margins, looking at plus or minus 2 or 3%, to looking at all of the education resources, linking them to quality indicators and best practices in education. So what are the new budget tools that we've developed? First, it's a database with comparable data across the continuum. It includes student enrollment and demographics, performance goals and indicators, spending per student data, revenue by source, expenses and revenues comprehensively, and the historical information and forecasting several years forward. To date, we've compiled 5 years of data, 1999-2000 to 2004-05. I want to be the first person to tell you that these data are certainly not perfect, that we had to make estimates. There are places where the data were not sufficient, and so there are gaps. We've had to make different cost allocations and adjustments to bring the different data into a more comparable form for you. So I guess I would summarize it by saying that the information you'll see raises more questions than answers at this point. We really think that this is a beginning point and are looking for your input. As far as proposed process changes, we're suggesting that unified budgeting be introduced at the beginning of the budget process. This year, as James said, the agencies worked very hard, and the result was an integrated set of policy packages across the continuum for your consideration. And we're suggesting that even starting earlier in budget development would benefit the system to standardize the disparate budgeting methods and linking student progress and system performance to budget development. Also, increasing budget transparency as budgets are developed and increasing communication across the education continuum. Proposed process changes, really a straw proposal for consideration in the legislative process, would be unified presentations to joint education committees at the beginning of the legislative session. And the idea here is really to set the context for the looking at the entire system as the session begins, beginning with Oregon's vision for education and the high expectations that you're setting, reviewing current investments and outcomes across the continuum, reviewing recent history, revenue spending, performance, and I think most importantly is forecasting trends, looking at demographics, resources, key cost drivers, and potential investments at a very high system level, and also looking at what types of policy support are needed to support those investments. James also mentioned that this should help to raise a number of questions as you consider the budget, looking at each group of students across the continuum. What are the performance goals that you have set? What are the results? How have we invested the money, and how is it being spent? Where are their leverage points across the system, again, to accelerate student progress and to make the best use of the limited dollars available? We've also recommended some next steps, and that would be to convene an interim task force to design the new budget process. As I said, this is a starting point. It's a straw proposal to maintain and add to the new database that we've created. It's important to that the budget requests for integrated data systems across the education agencies be that those be funded during the 2007-09 budget, because one thing we found was that there's a difference across the agencies in terms of the ability to gather data and analyze it, and we also proposed that changes be implemented beginning with the development of the 2009-11 budget. Then, moving very quickly, I'll go through the progress report and try just to highlight some of the areas that I'd like you to consider. In the interest of time, I'll try to just skip through these. And so I'll call your attention to page 4 in the progress report. This is looking at budgeting processes, and we created a matrix looking again across the continuum, and tried to analyze the who are the administrative agencies in charge, what type of budget methods are used to build the budget, who is responsible for budget development and for budget approval. Who decides how to distribute budgets, implement them, and so forth down the line. And what I think you can see by this matrix is that this is a very, very complicated process, and it doesn't look very much like a single system.
Understatement.
On page 5, we really focused in on the sort of the beginning of that matrix, looking at the budgeting methods and budget request approvals, and looked at, if you look at the top table on page 5, the yellow squares indicate areas where state agency line item budgeting is used. And then there are different methods for developing the state school fund, the college support fund, and the OHSU budget. For an example, university system budget as a state agency line item budget, the dollars that go to the universities contain 6,300 lines in the state budget. The state school fund and the college support fund are one line each in the budget. So there's very, very different approaches to budgeting. If you look down in the lower table, what we're trying to do here is suggest a way to make the budget development more consistent. And as we looked across the agencies, we believe that the K-12 approach is the most transparent budget development process, and so are suggesting an approach to expand that approach across the system. And basically what that means is that currently there's a state school revenue forecast committee that meets. It has membership of legislators, the governor's office, legislative fiscal, DAS, the education agencies, and stakeholders. And that committee works in a very open and transparent way to develop assumptions and to forecast the state school fund. And we're suggesting that still keeping separate appropriations for the various areas, that method be expanded, add other education agencies across the system, and develop budgets in a more consistent and open way. The budget requests approved by, rather than each separate board approving, we suggest that the joint boards of education come together. They do meet quarterly now, but that one of their responsibilities be to review the entire system, looking at education outcomes, system performance, investment opportunities, and give the final approval to the education budget request before it goes to the governor. So that is sort of our budget development work that we've done to date. And again, that's a straw proposal. What I'd like to do next is skip over to the data, and that begins on page 9. And this is, again, a sample of the data that we've collected. This particular data is from the year 2004-05, and this is really a look at our database at the very highest level, looking at groups of students across the continuum. Next, looking at the performance goals and outcomes that the state has set for these different groups. Then listing current performance, how are students performing against the state's goals, listing numbers of students in each category, and then the estimated spending per student by sector. Then moving deeper into the database into more detail on page 10, this is a summary of the revenues that were available for education in 2004-05. And this display serves two purposes, really. If you look down towards the right-hand corner, you'll see a total of $8 billion. And those are the total operating funds available for education in this particular year. These are operating revenues, excluding capital construction and debt service at this point. The shaded portion illustrates the amounts that are included in the state budget, which total approximately $5 billion. And the unshaded portions, about $3 billion, are not currently included in the state budget. The next display on page 11 is same year, 2004-05, looking at expenses. And one thing that we did when we began the project is that we wanted to tie these data to audited financial data and also data that had been reported to the federal government, the U.S. Department of Education, so that we could consistently tie back our calculations to these base data. So that's what you're seeing here. And if you look at the top of the chart, these are instruction, direct instruction programs, and related expenditures that are supporting instruction. And you'll see a line about two-thirds down the page that says subtotal instruction related. If you look over that to the right-hand column, that was total $5.8 billion in that particular year. And that number is important because it is those instruction-related expenditures that we use to calculate all the per-student spending that you'll see later in the other tables. The dollars below the line are areas like research, public service, auxiliary services that are not directly related to instruction. Continuing to move on, just some sample charts that we put together on page 12. These charts tell a lot of different stories. First, looking at the various groups of students, enrollment, FTE student enrollment for the year 2004-05, per student expenditures for that year, and then total expenditures. And you'll see at the bottom that $5.8 billion number again, so you can relate back to what we're including here in these numbers. On page 13, this is just a kind of a blow-up of the middle column on that previous page where it's expenditures per student, but it splits out state and local funding and tuition, federal and other funding. So we get a sense of the sources of funding as well as spending per student.
Mr. Chair? Is it okay to ask you a question?
I think do you have preference to try to get through first and then go back, no preference?
Go ahead, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On that average spending per student, is the OHSU School of Medicine, Nursing, and Dentistry included in that average?
Mr. Chair, Representative Cromwell, yes it is.
So follow up, Mr. Chair. Good follow.
Yes. So, as we look at K-12 and even the community colleges and the Oregon University system, lower division and upper division, not taking into consideration the graduate level and professional level, isn't that kind of skewing that 81-51, skewing it upwards?
Mr. Chair, Representative Cromwell, it does skew it up a little bit. The numbers of students in the professional and grad programs and OHSU are relatively small. So they're very costly programs, but we have very few students there. But it is a cost of education, and we're including all costs in the average.
Thank you.
Then moving quickly on to page 14, this is the beginning of our analysis of trend data, and all our analyses really are just beginning. We've just in the last few weeks began to put these into charts and graphs would really like feedback on better ways to present the data. Enrollment, this is the average annual growth rate and the net change between 1999-2000 and 2004-05. And so you see in the numbers, number of students in each year, the change, and then the percentage annual average growth or decline. At the bottom of the page are per student expenditures, the same thing, the change and percentage change presented. Then moving to page 15 and 16, we've further broken down the per student expenditures and identified the sources of funding within those student expenditures. So you see over this particular five-year period, the change in state funding per student, changes in local funding, on the next page, the changes in tuition and fees, and then changes in other sources of funding. And then on page 17, the very last page that I'll point you to, this is really another way of splicing the database and looking now, concentrating on a single group of students. This is a presentation done for grades K through 3, looking at enrollments, spending, and progress on meeting the assessment standards, and basically past, present, and future, forecasting ahead based on current assumptions, current system. But here you see the enrollment, spending, assessment scores for reading and math in third grade, and then disaggregated assessment scores also. We also, at the bottom, just are portraying a typical elementary school, and this is really data from the quality ed model, describing what a typical elementary school looks at current staffing and funding levels. So with that, I apologize for moving so quickly through so much data, but I'd be happy to answer any questions or respond to comments.
Thank you so much. Questions? Senator Morse.
Thank you for the presentation. Very good. Have you considered casting these in current dollars as opposed to historical dollars? A dollar 10 years ago is not worth a dollar today.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Morris, we certainly have thought about that. We haven't gotten that far, but I agree that often I like to look at numbers both ways, to look at without the nominal dollars and then also in real dollars. I think it gives a much clearer picture to see both. Thank you.
Yes, Nancy, I'm very impressed with how far you've come from the first time this concept was exposed, mm-hmm. and I'm very anxious to see the final product, but I would be remiss if I didn't say well done.
Just a comment from President Donner. Any other questions? President Bonner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just I think I know the answer, just to be certain. We're talking about operating expenses. We're excluding capital costs.
Mr. Chair, Representative Barnhart, yes, that's correct. We do intend to look at capital costs and debt service at some point. We just haven't been able to collect that data from all of the agencies.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Donald.
When you talk about budget transparency, because of the size and scope of this horrendous budget, what does transparency mean to you?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Donald, I think it really means putting it on a human scale, and that's something I think that the quality education model does for K-12. You can see per student expenditures. You can understand what does a typical school look like, what are class sizes, what kind of resources are available, and to me, looking at $5 billion or $2 billion isn't very comprehensible. And so it's trying to put it on something that makes sense and that can be readily understood.
Thank you.
Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Those of us that were part of the Oregon Business Council group had a lot of time to go through this. One of the questions, though, that sometimes comes up is, I think it is, in a sense, a very good exercise to see how dollars are being spent. But there's also the reality of it that in the state school fund, that once the dollars are approved, we don't really control how they are spent. we might see patterns of how those expenditures are changing, but we don't actually control how they are spent. Any reflections on that?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Devlin, that's the case, and I think one of the basic principles behind the performance-based budgeting is that as the legislature sets standards and sets goals and holds schools accountable, that it's their job then to spend money, and that as long as they're getting results and they're moving forward and making the progress that you're expecting, and following the best practices that are available, that's their role, and your role is really to make sure that they're moving forward and meeting your goals.
Mr. Chairman, I think one of the things that we saw in some of the earlier spreadsheets, some of us were, that was partially demonstrated maybe here, was I think over time the increasing expenditures in special education and the decreasing expenditures at the high school level, which many of us didn't question the need for the greater expenditures for special ed, but we could actually see schools making choices with limited funds of where those funds went. Mm-hmm. And you might see some reflection in that in some of the issues we have in high schools.
Mr. Chair, Senator Devlin, I think in the time period that we've looked at currently in the last 5 years, that very rapid increase in special ed costs has flattened out a little bit. But if you go back to 1990, there was a huge increase in both the numbers of students, the severity, and the cost incurred, and that did affect the other K-12 programs very severely.
Thank you, Senator. Representative Roblin?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And the question, I want to say congratulations and thank you for all the work. And the fact you started on Reed's Point is always really interesting. But that being said, I look at the quality education model, and one of the things that's nice about it is that because it's built as a model, you can make a different assumptions, and it will give you a projection as to what can come out of that. And so I guess what I'm saying here as I look at this is that should we expect at some point when you get the materials and everything there, that I can say I want to make a suggestion as a member of Ways and Means that we need to have a class size at a certain level in grades K to 3, and then I can put that in the model and it'll tell me what it will cost me to do that kind of thing. Or if I have some other objective that I want to get to and I know that it's going to create these kinds of things to happen, I can project that and it'll come out with a cost per child, and then I can take that cost based on the expected number of students, because we have pretty good projections on our school. And then we can multiply that out and find out what that unit is going to cost us.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Roblin, yes, that's the long-term goal. Right now, the quality ed model provides that kind of facility for K-12, but as James spoke to at the beginning of the hearing, the goal is really to be able to calculate those kinds of costs across the entire system. One thing that we found as we worked on this project is that probably the most important part will be the forecasting and modeling kind of utilities that we can provide.
I want to make an announcement just in case there perhaps are still people here. We had scheduled a work session on House Bills 5029 and 5015, and we're going to carry those over to April 5th. So I just wanted to let our committee know, and if there's anyone here in the audience who is waiting for that, apologies for any inconvenience. And would invite Representative Buckley and his committee to stay as long as they let. So, sorry for that interruption.
Appreciate it. Thank you, Chick Lizzie.
Thanks, everyone.
Yeah, just to follow up on that one. When you talk about transparency, I was pleased to hear that from your perspective, having a 6.3 or whatever is not as transparent as having a number such as a price per student at each different level. And that this, that's what this will really do. I mean, we can transfer it to a number, but the reality is this will give us the cost at any particular level per student. And as I read it, which to me is a really a much better way, both for school districts to understand how they're getting their money and us to watch how it's being spent. Is that kind of the intent?
Mr. Chair, Representative Goldblum, yes, definitely. Just to make the numbers more comparable, per student is a pretty simple way to compare across the system on what's happening.
One last follow-up. One last follow-up, and we have to go. And that is, and in this one, in this model, you're putting all revenues, so federal and others come into it. So what we can look at is what are we actually spending per student, which we don't really see very often today. And then once we've determined an amount we need, depending on whether the federal government continues to fund it at the same level or not, we can figure out what it takes to backfill. Somewhat like the model we're trying to do for students that are trying to go to college in their in the shared responsibility model. Is that correct?
That's right. One of the things that we're looking at is forecasting each revenue stream. So, for example, federal revenue streams for K-12 or for special ed or for scholarships or from student aid or whatever over time, and so that we can begin to see and at least project where different revenue sources may be increasing or potentially decreasing. At the same time, we're looking at student demographics and enrollment numbers and varying needs of Oregon for education. So that's the vision. We're not there yet.
Mr. Sager, do you want to hear?
Yes, if I could just expand a minute, because I appreciate your examples, Representative Roblin, about reducing classes, looking at costs. And I want to expand that vision a little bit, because as Oregonians, we say we want X percent of Oregonians to have college degrees, whether it's community college, university degrees, or professional certifications. And we have a target set for ourselves. We can actually lay out a game plan to say, this is the kind of continuing investment we're going to have to make over a period of time to reach that goal. Here are the kinds of resources and support systems for a variety of students, variety of ages, to move in that direction. And that is what we've been lacking up to this point. We've had kind of a model around K-12 on some specific elements, but trying to expand that and say, so if we do improve the completion rate for our K-12 students, what is that going to mean for our post-secondary system and for our workforce delivery system? And we're going to have to plan for that. So it gives us a much more comprehensive view of the entire enterprise.
Thank you.
President Donald?
I'd like to follow up with a question or two, if I could, for either James or Nancy. I want to know how we convert this to policy. And I think the example that we've talked about before, we have we want to target dropouts. Policy-wise, then, when we present the K-12 budget, would the legislature, the governor, the State Board of Ed, those that do the original input into the budget, design a figure that would be to address dropouts? And I'm trying to figure out how we would, the devil seems to be in the details, how we would get a school that has a 51% dropout rate engaged as opposed to one that has a 10% dropout rate.
Right. Chair Booker, Representative Dolan, you really ask a great question, because I think that's part of the challenge that we face. If we had a single school system for the state of Oregon, then we may be having a different conversation, but we don't. We have 198 different school districts, variety of high schools, as your example. So as the state of Oregon, our target is to get 99% of our students completing high school. Each individual school and district has to look at, so what is our most important need today to reach that target? And the example I would give is we've had a number of districts who have dealt with the dropout rate, for instance. But you look at their test data, and their test scores go down. And so then suddenly there's this cry for, oh my gosh, why did your test scores go down? Well, because we have more students we're keeping in the system, we need additional help in order to bring the total up over time. So rather than, again, picking a discrete point and saying that's what we have to target and ignoring the other elements, if it is the broader goal conversation with districts to say, you need to invest your resources in such a manner that it moves more of your students to this goal. Now you're going to choose where you put those resources based on that need. Another school district may have very low dropout rate, but their test scores aren't very good even though they have a low dropout rate. They're going to have to invest differently. So that's why we hope with this kind of modeling, not only does the legislature get a better picture of all the dynamics, but then we can also turn back to school districts, community colleges, universities, and say, you can now begin to compare against yourselves to say, well, so what are the best practices that you're doing to get this kind of result, and here's how I'm using my resources, and we start to share. So, again, it just creates a much more dynamic conversation around moving the entire enterprise to the series of goals we have as a state, as opposed to picking one and saying that's the only thing that we're going to worry about today, and we actually maybe have a negative impact on another factor.
Chair Venezio and Senator Morse.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Co-chair?
Are we the co-chair?
Co-chair.
we got some work to do. We'll be right back. I know we have a math problem in the state because this session alone, I've heard we either have 198 school districts, 199, or 200. So that makes me worried just from the beginning. So, but I'm not too concerned with that. Ms. Heiligman, you used the word simple when you were describing per student spending, and I don't know if you meant it in the sense of it being simplistic, because, for example, if you look at lower division per student expenditures for community colleges versus the OUS system, you see that, I don't know, there is approximately a $1,271 difference. Just a wild guess. And so at one level, you say, wow, community colleges are doing their job in a more efficient manner. It's all lower division credit. But at the same time, and they're not using graduate students, at the same time you could also say, but their missions are very different. The mission of a community college is very different from a research university. And so did you mean it's simple because it's simplistic and it's really...
Mr. Chair, when I use the word simple, I think what it meant...
So legislators can understand it?
No.
All right.
What it meant was a common, consistent method for calculating student expenditures. For example, in K-12, if you use average daily membership of students or versus student enrollment versus some weighted student enrollment, you'll get very different costs per student. And so what we tried to do was come up with a consistent method of calculating that. When you look at the data, I mentioned that the data and the charts that were displayed raised many more questions than answers. And these are very complex systems, and there are lots of different factors, different missions, different demographics, different groups of students, different goals. And this just is a starting point. It's not the answer. And we can get ourselves in a lot of trouble if we think it's that simple.
Senator Morse?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Going back to slide or page 5, the reference to a proposed new budgeting method and then a reference to the Joint Board of Education meeting quarterly. And I'm wondering if you could elaborate a little bit on where you envision the role of governance and how it might change and how it might fit the models. And then also put that in the context of the role of governance in K-12. And if I might just elaborate a bit, when I look at the Department of Education's performance measurements,
there are very few of those performance measurements that they can actually affect that have direct responsibility for in a governance sense. And I'm wondering how all this fits and if the discussion has gone into this whole area of governance and how do we effectively manage this enterprise so that we don't over-centralize, but yet we have centralized policies, but more distributed kinds of governance.
Mr. Chair, Senator Morris, that's a very big question. As we look at the governance issues related to budgeting, I think what this kind of transition would do, and this change in the budget framework would be to raise a number of governance issues. It does not automatically assume that these will happen just based on budgeting. Really, the only governance change that we're suggesting here is that at the end of the budget development process that the joint boards would step in and participate in the decision making. And that doesn't mean that you would have a consolidated K-20 board. It certainly raises questions over time that you could make these changes without major changes in governance. And that really was part of the goal. If this is to be implemented over the next 2 years, I don't think you could make major changes in governance structure and, you know, in that kind of time frame or would want to. It certainly raises the question, however.
Ms. Edwards?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to follow up on Senator Morris's question, also referring to the new budgeting method proposed on page 5. Where does the Quality Education Commission fit, if at all, into this structure?
Mr. Chair, Representative Edwards, commission does not directly isn't directly involved in budget development now. They serve as a the quality ed model really serves as a vision for K-12 education and as an adequacy model. And so as the budgets are developed and the resources available are determined, we're able to both look at the quality ed model and say, how does this measure up against the full vision for education in Oregon? And also, just to use the quality ed model as a tool to say, what if we, you know, add money here or reduce budget there, what will be the effect? And what would that effect would that have on performance goals, perhaps? And what would a typical school look like if, how would that change class sizes or resources available? So I see it the commission's work and the model as really a tool to support budget development and policy decision making.
Follow, Mr. Chair.
Follow.
Thank you. In my private life, I'm the founder and CEO of a market research-based consulting firm. One of our services is developing resource allocation models. Now, our business is focused on the private sector. Most of our models concern the areas of operation that contribute to customer loyalty and, by extension, market share. But it's very similar to what you're proposing here, and I appreciate the path you've gone down. In developing those models, what we found is in identifying the areas of improvement that have the greatest impact on desired outcomes requires a sophisticated level of analysis. You need to really understand the drivers of those factors. And so, and in this case, I imagine they will be programs or interventions at the school level. So I'm curious as about the reporting structure you intend to propose that to allow you to get that level of analysis so we can determine those programs that deliver the best return on our investment.
Chair Beasley, Representative Edwards, again, We don't have all the answers to all those questions. But let me suggest this and explain a little bit on what Nancy was saying. We really want form to follow substance here. In other words, we want that as we go through these changes in just thinking about how we have this cross-sector alignment in these decision-makings, the sharing of data, we have a great deal of research capacity in the state inside education at all levels, and we're beginning to tap those resources. And whether we're using the Quality Education Commission as they look at their work, or we're using one of the higher education institutions to look at post-secondary education, it is bringing all those resources to bear so that the joint boards could then look at the data that they've pulled forward and say, here's why we believe this is the best game plan today based on the data we have. Again, recognizing that, and this kind of ties back to the governance question with Senator Morris, I think we have maybe a rather unique setup in this state where we do have 190 plus 200 school districts, 17 community colleges, 7 universities, all actually working in a voluntary collaboration almost, if you think about it. And that's what is, I think, the most powerful part of this work, is that all of the sectors have stepped up to say, we see the value in this kind of collaboration work, and so therefore it is becoming institutionalized, not by mandate, but by the effort. And so the resources, the research is coming to us as we're pulling actually the folks into the conversation, and they're becoming excited about potential.
Representative Whitman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for your work, Mr. Sager. And Nancy, on page 5 that Senator Morris asked you about, could you please clarify SWPS, the statewide public service, and the public service under OSHU, and then I'll have a follow-up.
Mr. Chair, Representative Wesnant, idea here is that the statewide public service programs and public service in the university system and the public service programs at OHSU would be included in this kind of transparent budget development, so that the assumptions about service needs, inflation, revenues available would all be done by this one committee, and rather than the state line item budgeting that it's almost like trying to fit a square peg into a round hole for those programs. So that's the idea. They're not, they support education, but they're not directly instruction related. But the idea was the transparency and the sharing of information among the stakeholders as they develop the budgets.
Follow-up, Mr. Chair. So I like this, you know, concept. I have a bill proposed to come up with take everything out of the silos and have a children's budget. Did you discuss in the group about including education, like the Oregon Guard Youth Challenge Program, and the education and the correction facility and OYA? And that doesn't appear to be here.
Mr. Chair, Senator Wisner, we didn't get into that level of detail, but I agree that that's a good idea, that the programs that support education, all of those programs should be included.
Thank you. Representative Connell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In looking at page 9, I'm kind of wondering about a couple of things. So the first thing is the outcomes and Oregon benchmarks that are listed there, those are out of Oregon Shines, correct?
Representative Crumley, if that's correct.
Okay, thank you. And follow up, Mr. Barlow. With regards to the performance goals, are those also out of the, actually out of the Oregon Shines?
Representative Kerner, the goals are the ones that are under discussion. I'm not sure if they have been formally adopted by the Progress Board yet or not. But it's the 20-40-40 concept that would dramatically increase the education attainment level of Oregonians.
The reason why I ask is because, quite frankly, to say that we're going to have 100% of our children entering school ready to learn from age 0 to 5 is unrealistic. To have 100% of our K through 8 students meeting benchmarks in reading and math, when right now we're at 85%, and as low as 62% in reading and as low as 63% in math, again, I think is unattainable. And then when we look at the percent of students who drop out of high school, to have that at 0%. I appreciate the fact that we want to have, 100% of our population this way. But when you're setting goals and you're going to be budgeting against those goals and the expected outcomes, to put something at 100% is not realistic. And number one rule in goal setting is make the goals realistic. Now, I also agree that having it at 85% is too low. I think that we do need to set the bar high, but I think having the bar set at an absolutely unattainable goal is not a worthwhile exercise for us to go through, because the other thing that it does, it sets up an unrealistic expectation to the public, and we are doomed for failure. And the one thing that we can always say is, well, we were budgeting to our goals, and we just never budgeted enough. And in that respect, in looking at it that way, we could say, you know what, for the PK-20 education enterprise, we're going to throw everything that we have. We're going to throw, right now our all funds budget is going to be, somewhere around $49 billion. We're going to throw all $49 billion at it. And we could still end up with somebody coming back and saying, well, it must not have been enough because we didn't meet 100%. It isn't going to happen. So I think what I would caution us against, Mr. Chair, is setting a percentage goal like that is absolutely unattainable and isn't going to happen. I think, having 40% of our adults 25 years or older with at least a lower division education, I think that's a lofty goal, and I think it's attainable. Having 40% of our population having at least a bachelor's degree and some kind of graduate or professional level, or including medicine and dentistry as a goal, I think that is a goal that is attainable. But having at these lower grades, and I don't think it's fair to students, I don't think it's fair to us, I don't think it's fair to the public to set us up for failure. Mr. Sager?
Sure. Buckley and Representative Crummell, again, these goals were laid out to begin conversation, and you definitely began that conversation. As legislators and as citizens of Oregon, we have to set what the goals are for the state. Currently, for instance, we have a goal based, as we develop the quality education model for K-12, of getting 90% of our children to the state standard. No Child Left Behind says that target really needs to be up around 98, 99, depending upon how you look at it. So, again, this is the kind of policy decision that, as legislators, you need to be able to set. So then, in fact, we can apply that to this kind of modeling, and we can talk about, so what are those resources, what are those costs that would take to enable Oregon students, regardless of the age, to hit these kinds of targets. So this was a opening round benchmark, and it's easier to talk about a change maybe downwards than it is upwards sometimes.
Follow-up, Mr. Chair?
One more follow-up? I would agree, and also I think to a certain degree the feds have set the states up for failure also by having such a high, at 100% or 99%. Again, this probably isn't going to happen. A couple of things I am glad to see. One is projecting future expenditures against the outcomes. I think that's something that is something we should definitely be doing, because in that way it gives us something that's very measurable. The one thing I would suggest, though, also is that we take a look at the definitions
So that we're being very clear in terms of what the definitions are relating to and that sort of thing. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wanted to note that I've had a long acquaintance with Nancy Halligman. I met her when after Representative Rosenbaum's acquaintance with her in Reedsport, when she was the budget director and fiscal officer for the Eugene School District. And I certainly don't. I'm quite sure I do not know her entire resume. But she went from there to help the Department of Education work on the project of establishing the standardized system for accounting for K-12 schools, which is one of the foundation blocks for the document we have in front of us today. And then she went on to work with Oregon State University to help deal with some very significant budget problems that university was having. I know I'm leaving some things out, but then of course she's working on this project here. To some extent, we've gone from 1990 with funding for K-12 schools all over the map. Some schools having an adequate school year, others closing early because they were unable to get adequate funding from local property taxes, to equalization for public schools, finally a standardized budget system so that the analysis that's begun in this document could actually start. And now we are looking at a document where we're actually trying to compare costs and expenditures across the whole education enterprise. I know this is only a beginning, but I wanted to say thank you to Nancy for the tremendous work that she has. And in some ways, this document is a document describing her career. Maybe the question I have, if I have one, is, Nancy, isn't this the most complex of all the projects that you've been involved in up to this point? And I know there's a long way yet to go. Do you have any sense as to where we go from here with this project?
Thank you, Representative Barnhart. This is a very complex project, and as James alluded to, it's really the forecasting, the modeling, using this as a tool to understand what we're spending on education, where the opportunities are to leverage, where there are incentives in the system built into our budget model, and where our funding models may be disincenting certain behaviors. So I think there's just and probably the biggest thing is that it will provide a solid base for policy discussions, so that policymakers will have the information, not just a whole lot of data, but real information to support critical decisions that you're making.
Thank you for your work.
Thank you.
Very good. Thank you so much for your work. Thank you both for being here and making the presentation today.
Thank you for inviting us.
That's good. Very good. Well, I'm going to go ahead and close the House Committee on Education.
Close the House. No, no.
Join. You need to say join.
Join. I apologize. Oh my gosh. I'm done. I'm toast. Joint committee. Subcommittee on Joint Ways and Means Subcommittee on Education.
Right there.
I know, I can't enjoy it. And
thank you.
We need the tape.